I forgot Dolph Lundgren was in Universal Soldier. Oh boy. Okay, let's do this.
Start with Cronenberg. That's okay. A good idea.
Jump right into it. Go.
Oh, me? Okay. Well, I should start off by saying that I'm a big Cronenberg fan, and I go into anything by him feeling the same way as I do when I go into... actually, I have an interesting parallel to make after I give my little mini review here. Mm-hmm. So his new movie, Eastern Promises, is really following the same path as History of Violence, which kind of changed... in my mind, Cronenberg's style. Have you seen Spider?
No, but I'd seen trailers. Yeah, I got an impression that it was more like a Cronenberg movie, but also very different.
Yeah.
It was like maybe that bridge, the gap between stuff like Naked
Lunch. I'd say that's a fair
existence
assessment.
History of Violence.
History of Violence was something that we, as we discussed this earlier, we agreed that it was something that felt like it was like a drama, sort of character study. And then it just had these incredible moments of violence thrown in. Almost, to the uninitiated, you'd almost think that it was something that he put in there to placate people who were his fans earlier, which isn't the case, because it really had something to do with the story in that one.
And it wasn't Cronenbergian, if I can make that phrase. It didn't require sort of a more visceral, disgusting perversion of violence.
I don't know. I don't agree completely, because the scenes of the gunshot wound to Ed Harris's body was really kind of like he makes them look a certain way when he stomps in that guy's face at the end, near the end of it, where his nose was kind of resembles, like all Cronenbergian things, a butthole a little bit. I mean,
people usually draw the parallel that it's sort of a vagina or invagination.
Maybe. I mean, Existence was pretty clearly buttholes when the butthole in the back was how you plug into this video game. So Eastern Promises is kind of following this path, this new... if you just looked at a preview for it, you would see what you thought was going to be some sort of crime thriller thing with a Cronenbergian twist. And as you pointed out, it didn't end up being that. And I was very pleasantly surprised, because I felt that it was a fantastic character study of two different characters whose lives kind of... just barely passed each other and touched in this sort of way that their stories intertwined, and not so much that it would be some sort of thing like guy meets a girl, guy falls in love, tries to get out of a bad situation while she's trying to find something.
It was not a love story.
It was not, because they both had their own goals and they were both trying to achieve them the whole time, and really had only a passing acquaintance with each other.
Yes.
But the thing that drove the story for me was the fact that, until the quote unquote twist toward the end, it was something where you take a person who's in a bad guy kind of role, mm-hmm. even though he's obviously a protagonist. I won't say the protagonist. And I always find it fascinating to watch movies about people who are purportedly bad guys, and seeing how, like, you know that the person you see that is the protagonist will be the least bad of the bad guys, usually. He's the one who will stop to save a kid from getting run over by a bus.
Unless it's
like
a completely different kind of movie where he's probably the worst, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, someone like Joe Pesci is the main protagonist of Casino, and he's probably the most psychotic one they've got, right?
Right, yeah.
But that's a different kind of movie. Yeah. It's a crime movie like this is, but it's not so much of a drama as it is.
Yeah, this was definitely just, I think... a really good story, and I will have to let this kind of gestate more, and I'll have to think about it more. I'll probably want to see it again as well. But
I think I might too.
Just my initial, usually my initial kind of feelings about something is I can tell you how well I believe it was directed, how well I believe it was acted, and then just kind of how entertained I was and what I felt like after coming out of it. And I felt very satisfied leaving it. I thought the acting was fantastic. There's always the problem. In the first 10, 15 minutes, you're going to get scenes that just seem unbelievable. And I think that's almost the case in most drama movies, because one of the first things I notice, because they almost always start in scenes in houses, and people mm-hmm. are sitting down at dinner talking, and I always notice the lighting. I always notice there's a light in that room. They've got a large fill light or key light on somebody's face. And I always notice that in dramas when they first start. Then once you start getting into the story and the acting progresses and everything unfolds, I don't notice those kind of things anymore. But with dramas, I always notice them first.
I noticed the sort of set design to a point, and I noticed some of the compositional choices, and I noticed editorial choices, primarily, I think, because I had just gotten done with a class about directing where we were talking about different camera moves and choices, and you know, the left frame left is considered the power side versus frame right if you're talking about having two characters in a shot, and there was sort of an odd reversal.
Or
a three shot in the case of this film. There was a case where the main girl is talking with her mother, and then she goes into the kitchen, and the dining room, and there's an open space. There's an open between the kitchen and the dining room, and the mother is left frame left, and the action of the scene is happening, being shot through the kitchen, through this hole, into the dining room of the girl interacting with her uncle. And I was like, that just seems like that's bad composition, because the eye is sort of following the mother in this shot.
Yeah.
And then there was a few other points where the editing seemed choppy, or I noticed it, but it could just be because I'm, you know, a student of it. One thing that to me stood out as just kind of strange in terms of set design was that Naomi Watts is the main girl. She's like a midwife. I shouldn't call her a girl because she's probably like, you know, 35 or something like that. But she's in her room. She has a TV on her dresser, like where you would never be able to watch it, and it's just kind of like sitting there. And for some reason, they've shown it two or three times in the course of the film. Not like they don't focus on it, but it's in the background. It's there. It's a big set piece, just sitting there as this like TV, and it's like it's being stored there. And maybe that's sort of the point it's making.
You know what's funny though is that that didn't bother me, because on our dresser upstairs, in the same exact location as where we have our TV, just out of necessity.
But you never could watch it that way.
We do though. We do.
But you lay down in your bed and you listen to it in the corner of your ear.
You kind of look. You look off to the side. It's just because
hers
it's the only place
wasn't really
we
turned
put
like
it.
That. I think that what it, now that I think about it, I think
she could have had a chair against the wall or something.
It's possible. But I think really what it was saying was that she had just been transplanted.
Her life was transplanted.
And she just kind of had her stuff wherever it would be.
The interesting thing about the two characters is, I guess we should give a little plot summary. Not like a, you know, we won't give a synopsis or anything, but.
We don't roll that way. We're all about spoilers, but we don't really.
Yeah, I'm not going to try to spoil this one because it's a new enough movie.
Yeah.
But the basic plot is Naomi Watts is a midwife at a. She's on that new HBO show, by the way. That lady right there.
Profiler's back.
Tell me you love me. Yeah, Profiler, exactly. We got Universal Soldier on the background. So the Naomi Watts is a midwife at a London hospital.
It's in some part of town that like. I had trouble figuring out that it was even London.
Yes, they don't explicitly, because here's the thing about movies set in London. They pretty much always will show you the Thames and Big Ben.
Yeah,
and
they'll make a point of giving you the like, you know, geographic
By the way, you're in London. You know, that's what a Jackie Chan movie would have done in this case. Cronenberg, I guess, kind of is thinking that if you're stupid enough to think this isn't London by 10 minutes in, then who cares? Because it's not super important. Later on, a character mentions, this is London, I hate this place, I think his actual quote was something like, this place is so full of queers and something that it makes that out of people as well, because he's afraid that his son
weird,
is.
Yeah.
So Naomi Watts is a midwife in this hospital. A woman, a Russian immigrant woman, comes in. She's 14. She's had her placenta has...
It's a breach.
Breach, yes. And so she's bleeding. She's losing a lot of blood, and she's got this baby.
Wait, no, it's not a breach. It's not important, but it's the placenta dislodges.
You were pre-med. You should know
this. The placenta dislodges. It essentially it comes off the uterine wall.
Basically, they get the baby out,
and it's bad.
They get the baby out. This woman ends up dying. Naomi Watts gets the little obsession. Excuse me. Obsession is always a fair thing to put in any. Because a lot of movies are set around the idea that. Somebody's going along their normal life, something happens, and they start thinking about it too much, and they start investigating it.
Obsession is part of real life, though. Like,
absolutely.
I think most people
absolutely.
Have
I think
a degree of obsessive compulsive to them.
So she, they mentioned that Naomi Watts has recently lost a child. She's broken up with her boyfriend of I don't know how many years, and she's kind of moved into her mother's house. So she's, this now child, this motherless child in her life has made her start thinking about things. She wants to know where she can send this child so it can have a family. So she goes looking. digs up a few things and finds out that this woman had ties to this Russian restaurant in town, and goes to the door of this kindly old man.
She sees a card. That's as far as the investigation really
goes. This kindly old man talks to her and says,
Armin Mueller Stahl plays him.
Fantastic actor.
He looks creepily like one of my grandfathers who's passed away since. With no mustache, he does a little. It's very strange and disturbing to me.
That is a little disturbing. So
not a lot, just a little.
Just a little.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, it ends up being something where Viggo Mortensen's character is a Russian chauffeur slash body disposal guy.
He's kind of like a cleaner.
Yeah, the cleaner type thing. And obviously the badass, obviously, because he stands there kind of quietly while other people dick around. And he's
a man of few words.
Yeah, yeah.
Slick back hair. He's not trying to look cool for the now.
He's
dressed dapper, but that's because he's professional.
He kind of hits on Naomi Watts a little bit when she gets there, and she's not having any of it. She's just trying to find out what she can do with this kid. The guy tells her, why don't you come back tomorrow and bring me this
It's a diary.
Diary.
It's in Russian.
Yes.
She needs it translated she'll be able to
find
this.
And that sets up the whole plot, which basically has to do with the...
it's actually a pretty tired plot. I mean, in terms of what happens there, it's... starstruck immigrant girl thinks she can find a better life as a singer, ends up at this restaurant, turns out that it's really just a front for a brothel, and then she ends up getting doped up with heroin and turned into kind of a junkie prostitute, and then she gets knocked up by the Armin Mueller Stahl, which I guess is kind of spoiling a little, but not a lot, really.
Yeah, not a lot. That's not something far enough into it that it'll ruin anything. But so where it starts getting interesting is the fact that you're given information about Naomi Watts' character so that you understand her motivation, and you're not given any for Mortensen's until the end, which has to do with his little plot thing. But
yeah.
But he does give some that I think is very interesting. The more I thought about this, I thought it was more pertinent.
Mm-hmm.
Before you know anything about Mortensen, really, there's a scene where he's becoming a captain in the Russian mob.
Yeah.
And he's standing there naked except for his boxers in front of...
This is about past the halfway point.
And I thought that was strange. I'm starting to understand why they did it, which is, of course, has everything to do with a twist, which isn't really a twist. It's one of those non-twist twists that you should have probably seen coming.
Well, you will have already, anyone that's paying attention, I didn't get that it was London but I for a while, but I did get the twist pretty quickly,
because
it was pretty obvious at a certain point.
So he, at that point, they do this thing where they talk about where you get all these tattoos, and there's really only one place to get these tattoos if you grow up in Russia, in this area where this guy did, which is prison, and he did two, and you don't know if he's telling the truth during this whole time.
Yeah.
But this is really the only part of the movie where he talks about himself, so it has to be pertinent, it has to be important.
Yes.
What we're getting is his words here, and he says they're trying to goad him into reacting, so they start saying terrible things about his mother and his father. His father was basically a pussy who was
a bitch.
A bitch, yeah, and he kind of flinches a little bit, then he says, you're right, he was, and then he says something about, the other guy says, your mother was a whore, wasn't she? And he says, yes, she was. I have no father and mother, I think that his character, this is really hard to talk about without giving away the little thing about him, but I think his character was an examination of, like, that's the type of person it takes to really put their life into something.
That's the badass.
You're right.
And you know, I'll tell you exactly why, because that's the dichotomy. That's the best way to create the fully realized hero, anti-hero.
Yes.
Because that is exactly what that is. That's pure sacrifice.
Right.
To do the absolute good thing.
Absolute sacrifice. But usually, they don't even give these characters the chance to sacrifice something, because then you'll give them some sort of reason why you'll constantly be thinking, oh, they need to get out of this. In his case, he has nothing to sacrifice. He says I'm dead already. He says I'm dead.
Yeah, he does say that, but at the same time, it's
like he doesn't care at all anymore.
It's hard to talk about.
But I found the more I think about his character, I find him fascinating.
No, that's true.
And here's the thing about this movie that really I had read a few reviews that said there was one of the most incredible fight scenes you'll ever see. And I'd say they say that mainly because you see Viggo Mortensen's dick and balls repeatedly.
He gets tossed around.
He's in a sauna. And,
a sauna, yeah.
But what I was struck by was that he doesn't... There's him fighting a couple different guys with these hooks and knives.
Yeah.
And he gets stabbed and slashed with them a lot.
Like three or four times.
Yeah, and he's really messed up at the end of it.
Yeah, he is.
And in any other type of movie with a badass guy like that, fighting some people, he would have blocked every single blow. If it was a Steven Seagal movie,
yeah. Oh well, he would have got the obligatory flesh wound to the arm.
Yeah, yeah, of course, which he did. Yeah. Also, he got it, but
that was not the first wound.
No,
he
it
got.
Wasn't. He first got slashed down the gut or along the
side,
or something.
Then he got
like
the
that.
One in the back.
Yeah,
and then rather than walking out all cool like a badass, the next shot is of him with oxygen on a stretcher, knocked out, and pushed through. So
that was I really was stunned by that fight scene. I thought that was really. Cronenberg is
Cronenberg treats violence with an authenticity.
He totally does.
Like he doesn't shy away. I mean, he's got a Peckinpah effect to that.
Yeah,
like
he
if
does.
You look at History of Violence, and then you look at something like Straw
Dogs.
But
also Peckinpah glorifies it. Like, but he means to do it because he's trying to show how terrible it is. And the Cronenberg stuff happens quickly. He does close ups on it when it happens. Yeah. But it happens quickly, and it's just brutal. The Peckinpah stuff is usually pulled more back, so you can see the full effect of what's happening to the human body as a bullet blows through it, you know.
Hmm.
And then it does it in slow motion as the guy falls to the ground. The Cronenberg stuff is all of a sudden a really quick, visceral thing that just looks horrifying, and then it's done.
Because it just makes the point that this stuff can happen
and
quickly.
And then it's done.
And
the interesting thing about the Cronenberg stuff is he doesn't direct it in some... And this is more so the newer stuff. If you go to the older stuff, you're going to have weird angles. You're going to have strange musical scores. That's because he really started out in almost a horror type mode, and
it became horror
sci-fi stuff, and turned into just weird stuff. And then it eventually
his camera movements and his stylism are pretty subdued.
They
this,
are subdued,
and as well as in History of Violence.
Absolutely, yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say. Is that they're subdued.
You could almost say that he's become less self-indulgent.
Oh, totally,
I mean,
totally.
That's sort of a difficult thing to quantify.
It is, and I'm thinking that that he might have got a different reaction. This one is definitely not getting as good reviews as A History of Violence did, because they're saying it's just kind of like this is something that's almost underhanded, and it's not. It didn't slap you in the face when you watched it.
Mm.
I think it sticks with you, though. I've still been thinking about it all day. A History of Violence was something where you saw it, and you had this palpable tension that you felt all the way through it, even up to the very end. When he's sitting with his family at the table at the very end of the movie, you're sitting there like all tense still thinking, what the heck? And they're just staring at each other, and then it ends.
It's true.
So, I don't know, I appreciate Cronenberg's deal here. I like what he's doing. And quickly, before you go into yours, because I know what you're going to say. Well, I don't know exactly what you're going to say, but I know what your basic feeling was about it. One thing that I thought was strange about this was I ended up getting something different than I expected. And I got the exact opposite feeling when I saw the new Paul Verhoeven film, which was the Black Book, I think that was the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
Did I review that on here once?
I think you might have spoken
about
it. I think
I might have talked about it. You go into a Verhoeven film thinking RoboCop, Total Recall. You go into it thinking of that stuff.
Yes.
And Basic Instinct, you know. And that movie was the exact opposite, because it was like, it was this, it followed every single plot contrivance you could think of. There was all the obligatory, here's a twist, this character thing. And it had, like, everything you would expect from a movie like that happened. And every time it did happen, though, I was surprised, because it was a foreign film, and it was the most Hollywood film I'd seen in years. It was like a big-budget Hollywood...
Foreign film.
It was a big-budget Hollywood World War II film, but it was Dutch, and it was made in... It was made over there. It was made in the Netherlands and Germany and all over the place in that area. And it was filmed in like four different languages, five different languages.
Wow.
But it was so Hollywood, and it was so enjoyable. It was like a return to like, it was almost like watching Casablanca, but with graphic violence and nudity. And it just made me realize like the different paths these directors have gone on.
Yeah.
Because Verhoeven has...
You think he's matured himself?
He's also matured, but he's still got the same thing, which is he's always been a Hollywood director. And Cronenberg has never been a Hollywood director, and he's kind of turning into one now with the drama stuff, but he's still got remnants of his, the quick spurts of incredible, brutal violence that happens in all his stories. It happens in all of them.
I'll be curious to see what happens in the next one that he is more involved with on the writing side.
You're right, yeah. Because this was, I think, by some newcomer, actually, the guy who wrote it.
I didn't recognize it. It almost, to me, it felt like the kind of thing that could have been based off a book, but it wasn't
right.
cited.
It didn't say that. I think it was an original story.
But it really did feel like sort of story.
Go ahead and you...
I didn't enjoy it as much as you, but, I mean, I'm that way about so much stuff, and then I sort of have to think about it, and I think, well,
were you
no,
entertained?
Better than I liked. Yeah, I mean, I was entertained. There were a few scenes in it that I felt were kind of unnecessary or too long. Part of the gimmick was that it was this whole like intrigue of the Russian mafia, and so they had a lot of they had the scene of a party at the restaurant that had a lot of singing and dancing and stuff. Well, it wasn't that long or involved, but it was sort of to set the stage and the environment and the duality of this Russian mafioso guy,
right?
Which you only saw him in that environment, and you never heard... I mean, you heard about things that he might have done a little bit, but you never saw any of those things. You never really saw him... You heard him sort of give orders and stuff, but...
His character might have been the weakest, because they really didn't give him any sort of leeway.
They didn't make him a real villain.
But the thing is, the whole time, they didn't have anything... They did the obligatory redeeming things, like, oh, these are my granddaughters, what angels, and he teaches them how to play a violin. And then, of course, he's singing to the 100-year-old woman.
Yeah.
But those are things you see from every villain who lives out of his restaurant.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so.
But usually you see the other side that then says, oh, well, this is a real bad guy.
Yeah.
And you just hear about it in this one. So it's the same problem I had with, like, Unforgiven, where you hear about all this stuff, but you never, I mean, you know, it's like, show it, don't tell it. Not to be overly gratuitous. And then some of the things that were shown, I guess I'm just saying, some of the scenes that were in it, I mean, frankly, they just kind of bored me, and I felt like, well, let's get back on track with what's going on. I had a little issue with there was the Naomi Watts character, who was, in a weird way, kind of the main protagonist, because she was the closest to what you could identify with as a viewer. You're not being someone not involved with the mafia, you know. Unless you're a Russian mafia guy, then you probably would have identified more with one of the other characters. But you certainly, like, you know, as a male, I'm going in there and I'm like, I want to follow this dark Viggo Mortensen character, and eventually becomes more about him. And then especially after the twist at the ending, you're like, okay, now you're more inclined to realize that the story is about him in some sense. It is kind of like a happening. It feels kind of like it's almost like if you cut out all the stuff that to me feels unnecessary and you put it all in a different movie, then you could make that part one, and this movie with all that stuff cut out would be like almost like part two, and then there's more going on because it's like a happening in the sense that it's not a beginning, middle, and end type of story necessarily. It's sort of like a middle. I mean, certainly there's an exciting event with this Russian girl giving birth and the Naomi Watts character. But it almost feels like an episodic or like a serialized television show that's about the Viggo Mortensen character, and this is just one episode where he's not really the main character, no, so much as this Emily Watts guest star.
There wasn't a natural resolution in it that you expect out of film, and so I totally felt.
There was resolution for Watts. She got
there
her,
was a resolution. She, resolution
her goal
for
was maybe to get a child,
and not coincidentally, she was the only character whose real motivation we were given in the beginning, setting her up as the actual protagonist.
That's true.
So
it did have a beginning, middle, and end. It did follow proper narrative Hollywood film structure.
But it was a different beginning, middle, and end. A different end than you would have got from. You know, it did follow that structure, but not completely.
That's true. There would have been one other aspect that you and I both know would have happened, given it, and we don't want to spoil it, but given what the movie was really going on with, it could have done two other things that we both
when you see
expected
the crazy
maybe,
loose
happen.
Cannon drinking...
Actually, three, now that
when
I think
when
about
it. When
you
see the crazy loose cannon drinking son of a mafioso crime lord in any movie, you expect him to
get whacked about two-thirds of the way
come
in,
up and something happened to him. You expect something to happen to...
you expect the two main male and female characters to possibly have some kind of romance.
Yeah, and what's interesting with the Cronenberg stuff is gosh, this is going to give away stuff. You know, we really probably shouldn't worry too much
we're
about
okay.
this.
I think we're good now.
Another thing I want to mention, though, is I can't even do
you
it.
You
want to
spoiler bomb it?
No, I'm not going to spoiler bomb anything. We should Google bomb it, though.
Anything else about Cronenberg you want to cover?
It's just, you know, seeing this movie makes me actually want to go back and watch. I really would love to watch Dead Ringers again. I think I'm going to go watch Spider again.
I haven't seen Spider
yet. Have you seen Crash?
I've seen bits of it.
It's a creepy movie.
Yeah,
and
it's
also about
creepy.
It's also got the vaginal butthole type of imagery. There's this one scene where this guy, like this girl has like a vaginal looking tear in her leg after a crash, and he bangs her leg because like
that's
the wound, you know, like
really, really disgusting.
Yeah, it's these creeps who are completely turned on by.
Yeah,
like,
I know
yeah.
what the plot is. It's like it was James Spader and
yeah.
Holly Hunter,
and it was a Pulitzer Prize winning book or something like
oh
that.
Gosh,
so.
That's some screwed up stuff.
Yeah,
you know, if it delves into it. Everything's
yeah.
got to do it once,
but,
right?
But, you know, I think I would actually like to go back and watch some more Cronenberg stuff, because I've seen The Fly a bunch. I've seen Existenz a bunch. I very recently saw Scanners and Videodrome. I haven't seen that first one, that sex one, the zombie. Was it Shivers?
Shivers.
Yes.
Shivers is the name
looks
of
like it wasn't
David
his first.
Cronenberg.
He did
Scanners was first, I think.
No, Scanners was 81. That was his, like, seventh film. He did Stereo in 69, Crimes of the Future in 70, Shivers in 75.
Crimes of the Future sounds interesting.
Rabid in 77, Fast Company 79, The Brood 79, Scanners 81. The Brood is actually good. Have you seen that?
I've
heard vampire
about
one.
I'd like to see some of those older
Cronenbergs. Well, it's not really vampire. It's
like aliens.
It's just weird,
yeah.
Alien type stuff. Scanners, Videodrome, The Dead Zone. That's a weird one, too. The Flies, Dead Ringers.
I've seen The Dead Zone.
Naked Lunch. That's another one that I saw recently that's...
Oh, golly. I saw that when I was, like,
yeah,
10.
Yeah, that's he really put a stamp on that. That might be the movie that really typifies
the
first half
thing.
Of his career the most, is that.
Yeah.
That really typifies, you know, it looks like what you'd imagine one of his... Oh, here we go. Please show it. Yeah. you look at the perfect time. I was making noises so that Ian would look up at the TV and he saw Jean-Claude Van Damme's ass just perfectly. And it's glistening with sweat right now.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, and she's glaring. Oh, no, she's watching the TV. She wasn't even looking at it.
Maybe
looks like...
say that Jean-Claude Van Damme isn't all that.
Well, the girl looks like Lark Voorhees from Saved by the Bell a little bit.
Lisa Turtle?
Yeah. But it's not.
No, it's not. Whatever became of Lisa Turtle?
You know, she was in How High with the Method Man and Red Man. Did you see that?
I think she was
the love interest of Method Man. Red Man didn't get one because he was the goofy one.
Of course.
It was like the Bob Hope, Bing Crosby thing.
Goofy guy never gets
the goofy
love
guy
interest.
Doesn't get it, yeah. The road to...
because the road to Rhode Island?
All those, yeah. No, all those road movies, like the...
put on some pants, John.
Bob Hope doesn't ever get a chicken, though. It always pissed me off, because he was the one I liked. Bing Crosby's the smart ass who always gets Dorothy L'Amour.
And then he gets to just go beat his kids with a sack full of oranges, right? Wow.
As Bing Crosby is wont to do.
Claude's not looking so hot right now.
Has he ever? Is this pre or post gigantic knot in his forehead?
Oh, good point.
I think it's there.
Yeah, you can see it sort of.
Has he always had the giant? I was watching a bit of Bloodsport the other day, and he didn't have it.
Oh, man, I haven't seen Bloodsport. I'd really like to watch it.
With
Forrest Whitaker in the chase scene.
Yeah.
I've seen bits of it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I know how that goes.
It's one of those movies that I thought was great when I was a kid because it was rated R.
Mm-hmm.
And now you watch and it's like, this is lame. It's just this guy about this, you know, it's about this dude. It's a true story. So this dude who goes out to find Kumite, the secret fighting
championship,
and just kind of, you know, he joins
well,
the secret
fighting
championship.
He's doing it for revenge because his brother was killed by Hun Lee, right?
Yeah.
Who now
Chong
plays,
Lee.
Oh. Who now plays poker.
Chun Li.
Oh, was it Chong Li?
It's Chong Li.
I thought
every time
Hung
I saw
Lee.
That was right in the... Right in the midst of my Street Fighter playing days, so every time they said that, I was
Chun-Li.
Like, Chun-Li.
Yeah.
Chun-Li.
Yeah. Where's E. Honda, M. Bison, and Sagat?
Oh, man, that just makes me think of the movie that was so bad.
That movie was bad. Rest in peace, Raul.